afternoon, everybody. This is Robin Ayoub from the Localization Fireside Chat, and welcome to another episode. This episode will be recording episode number 169. And been my fourth today, so I don't have episode fatigue because I love doing this stuff. So I love talking to always do new guests and new ideas, new stories. I learned a lot from our guests, what they bring to the table, to the conversation. I appreciate every guest that comes along because they have to prepare for this. We all have to prepare for this, for the audience to bring you good stories, stories that inspire you, stories that help you move forward in life. And hopefully there are some gems inside of our stories that you can pencil down for your future. With this episode, I have the honor and a distinct pleasure to welcome Barb Stone, who's joining me from south of the border. We're not too far from each other. I still call it south of the border for some reason. You could call it like the same country at some point. Some people will get mad at me when I say that nowadays. I'm not going to go there. I'm just using it as close neighbors as possible. So let's put it this way.
Yes.
Thanks for joining me, Barb. Thank you, Barb, for joining me. I really appreciate it. Thanks for taking the time on a Friday afternoon to be part of the conversation.
Absolutely. Glad to be here and glad to be your neighbor.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Now, as we say on this channel, Barb, everybody's got a story. Why don't we start with this? Tell us your story. What got you here?
So what got me here? And, you know, I was thinking about that. What got me here is not going to get me there today. I was just thinking about that this morning because I know that I've got other things and it's the same thing that got me here is not going to get me there. I am a leadership development coach right now, but let me tell you how I got there. I have had an amazing career and journey in manufacturing. After I completed my MBA in operations and finance, I decided that what I wanted to do was get involved in manufacturing, because in operations, one of the things is you got a chance to really see how everything fit together. But I worked in a man's world, and I always had to look good and get it right. And I was like getting tired of it after close to a little over 20 years. And I'm going like, I moved myself up to being an executive vice president, CFO. And I'm thinking about, well, you know, our trajectory is supposed to be climbing ladders, making money, doing these things. But is it really filling me? Is it really the thing that I want to be able to make an impact in the world here? So about 3 years before I quit my job, I started thinking about me. What did I want to do? I needed to discover me because I was always doing something that was what somebody else wanted me to do. So I studied resiliency, positive psychology, got involved in John Maxwell with some coaching. And that led me to actually taking some coaching classes through CTM. A coactive, because I wanted to explore that. And I did. And I realized that as an executive and as a female leader in manufacturing, I really was a coach because I got into so many different areas that I did not know anything about. And what I really have recognized is we need to be really very coach-like in our jobs and in our industries. But that led me to coaching. And led me to doing speaking training. So I go into corporations and work with individuals and teams to be able to help them move forward. And then later on in the journey, wanting to really do more, I became a TEDx speaker. And I am now an author of a book, So Much to Drool About.
Not just an author, best-selling author.
Yes, a best-selling. And you know what, Robin, since we've spoken, I have won the best Independent Press Award for a gift book.
Congratulations.
I am really, you know, and it just, one of the things I wanted to do when I wrote this book was I really wanted to make an impact in people's lives and changing their lives. And I started thinking about this and I had learned a lot throughout my career and my life. And I'm going, I wanted to do something inspire people. And I wanted to make it a book that people could give. And when I got this award for a gift book, I was like, wow, okay, this is good. It's a lot of hard work. It was a journey, but it's worth it. Absolutely worth it.
You know what? It's fascinating. When I I read about you, I read what you've done, I read what you've been through. You know, this conversation, to be honest with you, today, it's so revealing for me to hear what you gave up. You know, most people, as you started saying, most people aspire to be an executive vice president and CFO for a large manufacturing company. And then they don't know what else to do. And they're sort of stuck in that. And they probably have no idea what's next. But you seem to have found yourself, and you talked about it as well. Try to get to know who you are first, and then decide what you want to do after that. Most people go through life, don't know who they are. Most people go through life because they're on a treadmill of some sort. Somebody put them there and they keep going on that treadmill.
Yep.
Yeah, you're right. Money is, you know, people aspire to make money, pay off the mortgage, whatever your next goal is. Buy a new car, whatever it is. But there's got to be a higher purpose for everybody. And that's the discovery that everybody is missing. What is your higher purpose? Is it to gather? Is it to pad your bank account? I don't know what you call it. To have more money in your bank account? I don't know. Maybe that's your security cushion. But to find out fundamentally as a human being who you are, that's a great achievement in my opinion.
It's really about being the leader of self. And when you become the leader of self, you really have to examine your values, your purpose, your emotions. And then you have to think about aligning I'm always going like this, and my husband's going, are you doing like the sign of the cross? No, it's because it's an alignment of you and what you're doing. And, you know, one of the things you ended up mentioning was people get stuck in this lane that they're supposed to be doing. And they start thinking about, I don't know, this is all that I've got to do. This is all that I've ever known. And, you know, and Robin, since we last spoke, I picked up this book called The Purpose Code. And I think that we are always constantly discovering a new purpose. And this book is written very well in the fact that a lot of people end up following the big P, the big purpose, what you're supposed to do in life. But then all of a sudden you achieve that big P and it's like, well, what else is there? And, you know, this is part of the basis of positive psychology. You always want to do more and more and more. But in this book, he starts talking about what's the little P's. And we need to take a look at the different things in our lives that may be gems that we may want to explore. I've had a client who was a big exec in a company outside of Boston. She helped organizations take their medical products to get certified quality-wise and to market. And she's going like, I don't want to do this anymore. And she says, what am I going to do? And how are we going to discover this? I had her literally create an explorer's hat because I wanted her to look at everything that she was doing through the eyes of an explorer, like an eyes of a child. Like, what if I gave myself permission to try this? Yeah, and what if you don't like it? And it's okay. You're going to keep going and keep moving. And for me, when I quit my job after 25 years, and the first year was a year, it was a tough year for me. It was a really
Why do you say that, Barb? Why was it
because
tough?
I didn't know who I was. I was the senior female leader directing people, directing traffic and manufacturing. And it's like all of a sudden now I've got to get out, market myself, figure this thing out. And it's like, oh my goodness, you know, who am I? It was the first year was a discovery of me all over again as I was putting this new person, this new business out in the world. And I mean, it took me a while, but I surrounded myself with people that could support me along this path, support me with guides and mentors who maybe could see things that I couldn't see. And that's one of the things I think as leaders, sometimes we think we need to know it all. And we don't. I work with a lot of startup companies, a lot of women business leaders and men who are trying to put some good work out in the world. And sometimes they want a prescribed way of doing things, but it isn't, because we are all individuals. We all have values and purpose and qualities that are different, that when you show up to do something, it may not be in alignment with you. So it was, for me, it was like marketing. I did everything in the companies except marketing. Oh my gosh, what was it? Marketing and sales? I got to sell myself. But I had it from my heart and really just wanting to connect with people and wanting to be able to help them on their path.
So tell me, like, when you were going through your journey initially, when did you realize that you were living someone else's definition of success? Because as you mentioned earlier, because, you know, you got to a point where you said you got the aha moment, but it must have started a little earlier.
Yeah, it did. It did. I think it started when I realized that I was really starting to lose myself, lose my who I was, and my relationships were getting lost. And my it just wasn't, you know, what I valued were people. We're valuing the human, because there's a human on the other side. But when you've got to make everybody and everything just kind of, you got to get this thing done. You got to hurry up. You got to meet these numbers. We forget about how to bring people on board and how to get them that there's things going on. So along the path, I started seeing, well, along my 25 years, I lost my husband, my first husband. And it reset me. It really ended up set me back and said, is this what I really want to do? And I kind of like took a reset and looking at it and saying, what can I do and how can I do things differently? But it stopped for a while. But then you get back because, oh, the pressure, the challenges, oh, the climbing ladders, oh, the money, the opportunities. And I always have liked to try something new. And so before I knew it, I was back into it again. And it's just, I felt like I was a hamster on a wheel.
On the wheel, yeah.
Going, yeah. And it was like, I wasn't stopping to really see the roses and what was really going on. And everybody gets to a point where they end up saying, okay, what's next? And that was, it grew. It really compounded for me. And I just said, hey, and my current husband said, go check it out. Go do what you want to do. And I feel grateful that I had the opportunity. And I'm still evolving. I'm still going, what else is there for me to do? Because there's so much that we can do for people in the world and making change and making impact to help them on their way. One of the things I want to do is, with this so much to drool about, is I'm looking to do it like a drool junior for schools. So because this is really lends itself to SEL training, social emotional learning. And these are things that need to go into schools because we don't really teach that to these kids anymore. So I'm on that journey. I'm training my dog to be Zeus, who's on the cover. I want him walking down the road to be a therapy dog so I can take him more into schools. That's what is making me tick now. And you know, Robin, one of the things in that first year, I started noticing about all the coaches, consultants out there in the world. And I started comparing myself to that and going like, what's wrong with me? Why can't I do that? But I'm not that. I had to, again, it's always that discovery of who you are.
Yeah.
It goes on.
And for the audience, I mean, this is a very fundamental question. Do you actually know who you are? For the audience, I mean, do you know who you are, really who you are? Are you defined by your job? Are you defined by what your teacher told you in the school? Are you defined by the influence of your environment around you, family, friend, teacher, managers, coworkers? Or is it you who are centered in the middle about who you are? And this is very fundamental because as soon as you find the answer to this question, you will have a huge different perspective on the world that around you. Yeah. And Barb brought a very good opportunity for us to explore, a very good point to explore. We call it in the world of business curiosity. We call it be curious. We tell everybody around us, be curious, listen. And that's what this podcast is about. We're curious. We want to find out. We want to talk. We want to have engaged with conversation with people. But Barb took it to another level, which I really appreciate that. And I think it's a fundamental learning point that I want to stress. Look at the world in the eyes of a child. Don't lose the wow factor. Keep the wow factor in your head. You know, explore everything. When the little kid sees something brand new the first time, they express huge emotions for it. And they feels to them very new, very shocking, very exploratory, as you called it earlier, Barb. That's very, very important. Now, you take this, I'm not saying this in the context of, you know, being a psychologist, and I'm not. But if I was to use this in any department and any company, from the receptionist all the way to the executives, if we look at every issue that hits us every day with those curiosity eyes, with those brand new discovery face that we put on every time when we were kids, I think the world would be a little different, and we learn a little bit better. Because as soon as we ask, we start asking why. We start asking how many time the kid ask you why, and then the mom and dad, they start saying why. It is true, though, when we are talking about these things and people become jaded. Now, back to this, how many executives do you think that you've dealt with that probably are misaligned already, and or they only realize it after something breaks? I mean, something must happen in their life. They say, oh, okay, I've got to reassess my priority. They call it reassessing my priority, but I don't know.
No, you know, a lot of the executives that I work with, they don't realize that they're misaligned. It's really kind of interesting. When I first started my business, one of the things I wanted to do was to align with some financial management organizations, because part of what they do is they kind of say, where are you at? Where are you now? And where do you want to be? By when? So what's the plan to get there? And so I started working with a few, and we put on some seminars, because I'm that coachy person that's going to ask you, well, okay, you have the money, but now what do you want to do with your life? And let's explore that and the possibilities. And so I put on a couple of seminars with one organization, and then they know what I do. They know my process, and they realize that they had a problem within their organization. And they said, hey, Barb, can we have a conversation? And I said, yeah, what's going on? And they said, I got this going on, that going on. And is this the kind of thing that you help companies with? They said, absolutely. But it didn't, they walked alongside me and they heard this, you know, they heard coach, and everybody goes, coach. But I still have a coach, and I believe that I need to be able to bounce things off of people to be able to help see things I'm not seeing. And therefore what happened is I had a 2-year engagement with this company because they needed to reassess what was going on the team. They needed to move the team forward. But what I do is I couple it with coaching of the individual. So I train, but then I coach the individuals, because as you start changing the organization, the individuals have issues that they need to deal with. And I give them that chance to kind of talk a little bit about it and move forward. And sometimes they will find that it's not where they want to be anymore. And that's okay. You know, either find another position in the organization or move on. So it's because, you know, one of the things is I don't like people, and I don't want to get stuck. You know, life is too short. Time is too short. And it's like we need to be the best we can. And that's what I try to do with the organizations, but then also taking it down to the next level with the individuals.
Now, the next segment, I'd like to talk about resiliency. And you know, in your opinion, you challenge the idea, for instance, that looking good is getting it right. It's fundamentally probably not okay. So how and why is that so dangerous in your opinion? The idea of looking good and not, you know, it's not right.
No, you know what? So that's what I did in manufacturing. I look good. I've got it right. I had to work harder, work longer, jump through loops to be able to ensure, because I knew that I had a bullseye on the back of my back. And so I needed to stay ahead of the game. And what ended up happening was I really found that I had lost myself. I lost my authenticity. I lost my voice. I didn't know how to speak. I felt like I needed to walk into that conference room, or I needed to walk into the office, have everything, all the T's crossed and I's dotted. I could not make a mistake. And that caused me such anxiety caused me so much of my soul of knowing who I was. We need, you know, one of the things about this book is I want people to live large. I want people to step out and take off that mask, you know, because they've been trying to look good, and just be who you are. People will be attracted to that authenticity, to that realness in you. You know, once I finally ended up saying, okay, I can't do this manufacturing thing anymore, I need to be me. And it took a while for me to unfold who I really was all over again, not in manufacturing.
Now, in your opinion, is resiliency, like people talk about resiliency in various ways, right? Is it sometimes used as a way to avoid changing a broken system?
That's interesting. I think that...
Is there a connection there, Barb, do you think?
Well, I think a lot of people end up thinking they're broken. And I'm going to end up saying, I think that people are not broken. They just need to really be focusing on what's good. Resiliency is about bouncing back. They may think that they're broken. I remember when I first started my journey, I took this class called Crafting the Resilient Life. And I started thinking like, well, why should I take this? I've lost my husband. I've had a lot of issues. I have alopecia, and I'm resilient. But what I didn't realize was I didn't have the tools. And that's really what I needed to be able to do, was to have the tools of resiliency, the tools of tapping into my strengths, tapping into my tribe, to be able to move forward and not necessarily look at that brokenness, because we're really not broken. But I will end up saying there's so much commonality. People hide behind it, so you don't see it. There's a lot going on. And one of the things I truly talk a lot about with clients is that there's a human on the other side. You don't know what they're going through, and they can be resilient, but it's also about being curious, having that conversation, taking a look on powerful questions, unfolding what's really going on, because the truthful person will come out. And it's like, then how can you help them? But they've got to get out of that mask. They've got to stop looking good and really start thinking about being vulnerable. And when you become vulnerable, it's when you can really start living and really start discovering yourself and moving on to bigger and better things.
You know, when you talk about vulnerability, I feel like we should also talk about the fear of disappointing others. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that fear perhaps in a lot of cases shapes executive decision making, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know if you agree or not, yes. But, you know, we're always trying to be good to others and not disappoint everybody and take more on our shoulders. But at the end of the day, we tend to forget that we're humans, as equal as the rest of the guys, the rest of the people around us, that we're not superhuman. You know, the fact that you got a different position, it doesn't negate the fact that you're human.
Yeah, one of the things you hit a great nail, and I end up talking about to individuals, to teams, to my clients, to talk about giving themselves permission. We do not give ourselves permission to be human, to make a mistake, to say, I'm sorry. When, you know, we're going to let somebody down, but, you know, if you tried and your best and you try to cross your T's and dot your I's, and this is something that I could not do back when I was in manufacturing, I could not give myself permission to make a mistake, to be vulnerable. So giving yourself permission to say, I did my best, but I need help. I would like to try it. I learned. Next time, this is what I'm going to do. This is what I'm going to change. There are four questions that I always ask clients during different times in our engagement is, what's working? As you look back on the year, say, what worked? What didn't work? What did you learn? And what needs to change? Those four questions can, if you're constantly assessing, you'll give yourself permission to be able to see that you made a mistake, but you've learned. That's the biggest key, is knowing that you've learned and you can move on from it. But give yourself permission. We beat ourselves up so much, and it becomes we that energy where we could be putting it elsewhere, it just goes nowhere. It does not become productive.
Absolutely. And the cost of not doing that, I'm assuming, like staying in a role that no longer fits, et cetera, there's a cost for that to the individual and to the company they work for.
The cost,
Yeah. So, going through the assessment process that you just mentioned there, Barb, it's very important that everybody can do that on not just in an executive position, in any position in life, you should be assessing all these factors all the time. But sometimes when you are, people say, oh, I'm busy 9 to 5, or, I'm working like 70 hours a week and I don't have the time for this. In parallel to all this, I'm always thinking personally, I always have like several tracks going on in my mind. I've got the first track is I'm talking to somebody and I'm doing a podcast within another track. I've got like a bunch of other meta world going on, meta universe going on. So I don't know, but I do feel like individuals need to assess their status and their situation. At the same time, at the cost of not doing this, then you end up costing yourself a whole bunch of issues. Could be in sometimes psychological, physical, and also financial to you and to the organization that you work for. Am I correct there, Barb?
Absolutely. I think that, I'm going back to my TEDx talk because it was originally called Looking Good and Getting It Right is Killing My Soul, but TEDx organization changed it to Perfection is Overrated. But one of the things was the cost. For me, the cost of doing that was a cost physically. It created issues in me, in my body. I lost my hair, lost a kidney, and I'm always constantly dealing with, just I have to continuously meditate every single day and be grateful. I really have to. Otherwise, I will just it's can so easily grab hold of me again. And I've gotten to the point where I want my life to be in flow. I want my life to be able to move forward. But one of the things I wanted to bring up as we're talking about the cost to us, is a lot of times individuals will end up seeing that things have happened to them. They become victims. They think, oh my gosh, it happened to me. And I want your listeners to think about changing that to going, life can happen for me. So when you are going through these things, when you realize that maybe you're not in the right job or maybe you didn't get that promotion, it is not happening to you, it's happening for you to make you change. So I want your listeners to think about what can, they can take that for you and it for me. But then you can even still take it to another level, that it can happen through them, that they can help educate people and really pass on the wisdom that they have learned through their mistakes or have learned through their lives. And that's really what I'm trying to do in my life, is that I've had a lot of things that have happened to me, and I've had to make a lot of decisions to move away, and I've had a lot of I didn't get some jobs, but then at this other time I got lots of jobs. But it was a factor of learning to be able to move on and move forward in their lives.
Now, like you bring up a very good point though, when an executive is at that stage of realizing all this, and there are executives, like they're at the top of their career, they're at the top of a company, and they have people around them. In your opinion, what is the environment around them? Like, what is the environment around them in terms of staff that they work with, in terms of teams, in terms of suppliers that they perhaps work with, that ecosystem that they're a part of? What's the
I
impact
think,
on that ecosystem?
well, it depends upon how they're handling it. And it depends upon how, they've got this team around them. Are they engaging the team in the process? Are they bringing the team around, or are they just, this is what you need to do, and you need to follow me. This is my directive. This is my goal. These are my objectives. And we're going to do this. But when you end up telling your team and the people that are around there that this is what they're going to do, you start losing a lot of energy and a lot of brain power because you're not allowing them to come forth and be part of the solution to the problems that go on. You want, as a leader, you need to create leaders in their jobs so that you can lead the organization to being a visionary and that they can take, and you, as a leader, you need to trust them. But again, you need to have the right people in place to be able to ensure that they're going to follow you as you're leading from there.
It
depends upon the leader.
What does a healthy leadership look like, in your opinion?
What a healthy leader looks like, one that is a visionary, one who knows their limitations, one who knows their values, but one who can bring visionary to the people and be able to create the team that is going to support that vision, and they will lead it because they, the people that are on that team, I am always a I like to embody things. So I make people get up when I'm talking about leadership because I need them to really feel that they're leaders being a visionary and they're bringing the rest of the team along. Just as each one of those team members that they have, they need to be leaders and visionaries in that job and their job, and then bring their subordinates along or bring the rest of the team along to be able to understand where they need to go. And it doesn't happen overnight because we're all individuals. We all have our own values and purpose, and it may not be in alignment, but there's one of the things that's really important in going back is communicating, listening. And you know, as you were talking about, you've got all these other things going on, and you know it's, there's like the level one listening is, okay, I asked them a question, but I'm thinking in my head what their answer should be. Okay, so then there's the next level is where you're really very, very direct and listening to every single word they say, and you're picking up powerful questions and you're being curious about it. But then the next level is about a global thing. What's happening with their body? What's happening with their expressions? Asking them, finding out what's going on. You know, a team is a bunch of individuals that are going to be partners moving the vision forward, but they have to communicate. There has to be a listening going on. And one of the things I do with a lot of my teams is I start out with a design team alliance. How are they going to be as they're moving forward? Because that's really important.
You know, you're just talking about this, and I have a few things, because as you're going through this as an executive or as a, it doesn't matter, as an individual, as a human, you have to redefine a few things in your life, right? So you talked about it earlier. Redefine what's success for you. A lot of people say, you know, success is by materialistic things. That's their prerogative. They can do that. A lot of people would say, well, success is living happy. What is happiness? You know, it depends on the individual can define happiness the way they want to in their own world. But in your opinion, when somebody decide to go through this process of change, because that's what it is, you're changing, what patterns do you see finally show up when they slow down and get honest with themselves?
Yeah. Well, you know, you hit on a nail that I like to talk a lot about, which is what comes first, success or happiness? And because I myself thought, okay, I'm going to be successful and then I'm going to be happy. But the problem is that I kept climbing. And I still wasn't happy. And I think that there is a lot to be said about slowing down to speed up. And sometimes we need, and that's what I needed to do. I needed to get out of my manufacturing lane and slow down and start thinking about what else is there. So I find that one of the things I draw a lot when I'm Zooming and on the whiteboard is it, you know, when they're starting a discovery of wanting to do something else, it's not a straight line. It doesn't start here and go there. But what it does is there's learning, and then there's going up and more learning, going up and learning, because this journey is self-defined. And that's why I really think you need a coach and a guide with you.
You know, it sort of reminds me of somebody's trying to quit smoking.
Yes, absolutely.
It doesn't happen overnight. You've been smoking for 20 years, and then you expect to quit smoking like in 24 hours?
Yeah, but you know what? So this one particular client, and I worked with her for 5 years to be able to finally get, you know, to where she needed to be. But the thing about it was, when we started, she says, "You got to help me find my next thing." And I'm going, "Okay, I can't define that next thing for you. We together will define it." But it takes a process of really discovering. And I'm always talking about individuals discovering, even when they're trying to put their business out in the world, what's the right thing for them to do. They have to discover it themselves. I can give them a guide, but if they want to step into something, they got to figure it. I'll never forget, my first business coach said to me, "Oh, Barb, you just need to be posting 7 times a week on social media and you'll get 3 new clients a month." And I'm going, "Really? Let me just slip my wrists." You know, it didn't work for me that way. For me, it was about getting out, meeting people, talking to people, networking, to being able to allow people to find out about me, the human, and then seeing if it was a right fit. So yes, it's like smoking.
My point on the smoking piece is that most executives, they are where they are right now because of many years of the same thing.
Yes.
You're doing the same thing for many years. Change can happen and will happen. But and perhaps at an accelerated rate, that's fine. But, you know, what you're advising is, you're probably not saying this is going to happen overnight. It's not like a flip of a switch here.
No. And you will start. That's why, you know, this book, The Purpose Code, is really touching base, because, yes, we think that this is what we need to do. And yes, you can continue to do that. But you also have to start thinking that big P, as long as that big P is filling a purpose, and how else can you find that in your job and discover that and create an entrepreneurship? I remember years ago when I first finished my MBA, I actually interviewed with Xerox in Rochester, New York.
Yeah, that's local to you guys. I've been to their office.
Yeah, yeah. Except I don't even know if they're really there or not anymore.
I don't know either.
Yeah, but one of the things the leader that I was interviewing with said, "I want to create entrepreneurs in my organization." What does that mean? Entrepreneurs are creators of doing something new and exciting and making change by discovering something that will change the product, change people's lives. So I'm thinking, like, you know, as we're talking and having this conversation, this came back to me. It's like, executives and leaders, how can they be more coach-like, but also entrepreneur-like, to be able to discover what else is out there for themselves and for the organization, so that they can continue moving themselves and the organization forward?
Did you get that job?
It was between me and somebody internally, and the internal person got it.
So my goodness.
It was fine, because at the time, my husband was, he had a good job here. And, you know, I don't know, traveling to Rochester on the thruway in the wintertime and everything, it would have been a little bit of a challenge. So I'm very happy with my path that I went through. So again,
No looking back, right, Barb?
No looking back. And I learned from it. I had a great connection with the hiring manager. And he helped me think about different things. He gave me, I'll never forget, the goal, Ellie Goldratt, and the goal. And it changed the way I saw manufacturing. So all these little spots that might have been a failure were not, because I learned through that and I took it forward.
Now, let me guess a few questions. Last ones. What leadership advice do you fundamentally disagree with?
What leadership advice do I fundamentally disagree with? Wow. Because it's, one of the things is I think that there needs, leaders come and say, okay, I'm now the president of the company and I know everything and I need to follow that. I think that that is so wrong. I think that yes, the president is there to take on responsibility and ensuring that the vision, but I think that the leader needs to put a team in place to be able to support the so I want you to know that I remember that I thought after I finished my MBA that I knew it all. And I think that you can't put somebody in place that doesn't have people skills, that just is there to do a task. Because if you think that that leader is going to be, that leadership just means meeting the goals and objectives of the company, you're losing out on a lot of what the company can do. I think that's a misnomer.
I think, you bring a very good point that everybody in an organization needs to be able to communicate and need to be a people person. I sort of don't like the idea of engineers or being like behind a desk and they're just doing their engineering thing, or in our world, a translator who never really sees anybody who just sits behind their computer and they translate all day. And the job description probably doesn't say that you have to be open-minded and talk to others. But at the end of the day, we all interact with each other in a variety of ways. Today, more than ever. Before, we were always talking to each other, like we're doing right now, verbally, face-to-face almost. And now there's many ways of interacting with each other, emails, texts, and a bunch of other things. And it comes through, to be honest with you. Like whatever you're feeling, sad, mad, dissatisfied, it carries through your communication style, and people can
Yes, it
decipher
does.
that.
It absolutely does. So, I think that you need to, you can very easily, with your communication style, just turn somebody off. There is a great book called Leadership and Self-Deception. This is where we start thinking about, it's by the Arbitrage Institute. And what happens is you, as a leader, you can start thinking that you know what that person is thinking and doing, and you start putting them in the box, which means you're not really communicating. You're just, okay, that's what you think, and it creates barriers, it creates boundaries, and that's not what you want. You want to be able to come outside of that. And that's where the communication comes in. That's where the listening and the powerful questions come in, because you don't know what that person has really gone through or what that person is going through to
Agreed.
have gotten to work that morning. So, give people, there's that word permission again. Give people permission to be human and permission for you to ask them questions. Hey, is there anything I can do for you? What's wrong with a leader asking that?
Yeah, that's
That
right.
really
That's right.
shows that they're a human too.
Humanizing themselves, yeah. Absolutely. If a leader is listening today, Barb, and feels stuck but functional, what's their first move?
First thing is to start moving. Truly believe the antidote to stuckness is movement. So it's movement to starting a course. It may be movement to getting a coach, to getting some training, finding out what you need. That is what, we all think we can be powerless, but if we start moving towards something, and even when you take a step, you may realize when you take that step, that's not where you want to go because the ground is a little wonky. Will you take another step? until you find out what you want and who's going to be there for you. But I, you know what, Robin, I still work with a coach and I believe that people need coaches.
You know, and coaches can come in different forms. I probably agree with that.
Absolutely.
Could be a variety of ways you can define a coach. You can formalize it in a coach, you know, person relationship, or you can have it informal, sort of a coach relationship. So I do a lot of, through the N49 networks, that's the company I just started, I do a lot of mentoring, but I do it on a different level, like young entrepreneurs or small business owners. They're trying to move their business a little bit further, you know, give them some ideas, have coffees with them. Like, this is not a formal coaching per se, but a sounding board, if you will. How do you deal with this situation? Answer some intimate situation that otherwise they wouldn't probably put it out there. In the ether kind of thing. So, feels like it helps people. It helps people quite a bit, actually.
You know, Robin, I think about in my career, I had so many mentors along the way because I did not know. I'm first full generation American. My father was born in Poland. My mother was born here, but her parents were born in Poland. And I had to find my way into the American system and going to school and what was it all about. And so I needed guides. I had great teachers. I had great mentors. And I had to come out of my shell. But once I did, I really started talking to more people and really creating a tribe around me to be able to help me move forward. And that's what you're doing. And that is so great because we need more of that in the companies to be able to help the youngins move forward.
Now, as we come to an end of our session, Barb, is there anything else that we have not covered that you wish we did? And feel free to do so. How do you feel about the conversation so far?
You know what, Robin? I have really enjoyed this conversation because it's been in flow. And that's what I really, really...
I'm glad you like it.
Yes, I do. Because it's not like I have to say this and I have to say that. And so I truly have enjoyed it because it has been... We've just built on the conversation as we've gone along. But one of the things I think, you know, we've really touched a lot of different things. And I'm just taking a look at a few notes. But one of the things I truly believe in when I do my book talks as to how I went about creating this and the process and everything, I teach about this thing called quantum flirts. And what is a quantum flirt? A quantum flirt is something that comes to you and says, maybe it's a book, or maybe it's a new job, or maybe it's a new course, or maybe it's something you want to learn. And it's like, you go, okay. You look at it and go, no, not right now. But then all of a sudden, these flirts keep coming back. So, and the flirts are just ideas or things that come to you. And before you know it, more flirts are going to be aligning, and it may be aligned with people. It creates more curiosity and creativity in you. And this is where you're going to make the change, because you're going to unfold that rock and look at it and say, do I want to walk down that road? Start walking down. Life is too short. Be curious and try new different things. So I want to leave you with quantum flirts.
I love that. You know, I never heard of quantum flirts. I've heard of quantum computing, quantum physics, etc. But quantum flirts, that's a new one. I got to look that up. Thank you so much, Barb, for your time.
Welcome. Thank you. Really, truly, Robin, have enjoyed this conversation.
And anytime you want to come back to the channel, would love to have you back. Would love to have more conversations on the topic. Maybe next time I will do a check-in with you, see how you're doing, and see how the process of changing people's hearts is going with you. I think that's what you're doing.
Taking
them to a new phase of their life where they find happiness. I really enjoyed this conversation. Everybody, you know, don't want to talk about the elephant in the room, but today I think we addressed it. I really appreciate that. Most people, they put on a strong face and you know, the, I don't know what you call it, the monsters are screaming in the back of their minds. But today I think we've unmasked a few things, right, Barb?
Yes, absolutely. And the thing about it again is permission, you know, to maybe not have it right all the time. And it is okay.
100%. 100%. So on behalf of myself and the audience, I really want to thank you, Barb, for joining me. Barstone, ladies and gentlemen, she is a tremendous guest today for me to finish the day with. I really appreciate you having, you know, taking, spending some time with us and getting the audience to listen to your story, get advice from you. I hope they took notes. And for the audience, just remember, I produce about 20 to 30 short videos in addition to the long video that we put together for this podcast. So you are able now to consume the content in a smaller chunks. And those are what we call the hot topics that were addressed during the conversation. So those are all extracted and put on YouTube. You feel free to browse through the list. You got 1,000 of these things now. And also I produce a blog post. If somebody don't want to listen to the entire thing and they just want to get the Cole's Notes version of it, it's a quick read. It's about 2-3 minutes. It's on robinayoub.blog. You can go download it or check it out. And if you want to subscribe to it so you'll be aware of what's going on next time, please subscribe to the blog as well. So thanks, everybody. Thanks for joining us. I really appreciate you listening into episode 169. And Barb, thanks so much again.
Thank you, Robin. Thanks for doing what you do.
Appreciate it. I'll see you guys at the next episode.